opening slide here, we're going to be discussing, starting with the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1. This is the first of the three invocation verses to the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this verse is specifically presenting sambandha, or the absolute truth, and how all things that exist have a relationship with their source of emanation, the absolute truth. Built into this, Lord Chaitanya's teaching is that there's a oneness and difference of all, between all things and their source of emanation. And as we discussed this morning, there isn't a third something. There's Krishna and there's Krishna's, and there's not a third thing. And all those things that are Krishna's are in relation to Him. So this first verse is describing what I just indicated, the absolute truth and the relationship of all things with the absolute truth. I once taught a course in Dasamula. Just tell a little story. One of our devotees in India was visited by an elder member of the Gaudiya Math. And he asked him, "Do you know what is Dasamula?" And the devotee wondered, maybe that's a preparation. You make ten different kinds of roots together and you make a root preparation of some kind. And the man, I think it was a sannyasi, in a dismissive, haughty tone said, "You don't know what is Dasamula? Half of your life is wasted." I feel like that kind of a thing. So I thought, I would like our devotees in ISKCON to know what is Dasamula. Dasamula is a term that was used by Bhaktivinoda Thakur to describe the 10 essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya in the category of sambandha, avideya, and prayojana, as Lord Chaitanya taught. The Vedas have these 10 things. And so he then expanded the three things, sambandha, avideya, prayojana, to 10 things. And it's consistent. Maybe he wrote 100 books, so maybe half of the books make mention. In some cases they detail, and some books are just dedicated to that topic, the essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And sambandha is the first of them. Without understanding sambandha, here's what Haridas Thakur says: you can't chant properly. You can chant, but if you have a wrong conception of Krishna and you chant, the first chanting that I did was under the guidance of somebody that was an impersonalist. I didn't know what an impersonalist was. I don't know if he did either. But the chanting was with the idea of becoming one with Krishna. I didn't know that when I started chanting, but that was the concept that the teacher of chanting had. So you can't get the full effect of chanting, Haridas Thakur says, without proper sambandha, gyan, knowledge of the relationship of all things with Krishna, the source of emanation of all things. So this first verse is sambandha. And it answers the question, maybe we haven't asked, maybe we have asked, but what is the absolute truth? When people say the absolute truth, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote a whole book of essays entitled Search for Truth. So when people are searching for God, you know, that may be something that's, for a Western audience, maybe more familiar, search for God. But the Vedic conception of truth is greater than God. God indicates a controller, Ishvara. And the demigods, they're Ishvaras. And, you know, this young boy here, he's in charge of his pen. He's pushing his pen across the paper and he's controlling his pen, kind of, till he gets distracted by his other friend and he giggles and he gets distracted. But you're all in control of something. But then the concept of God and the concept of the absolute truth are not the same. So it's searching for God, a controller, and searching for the absolute truth means that from which everything comes. Janmat yasya yataha, that from which everything comes. The Bhagavatam is teaching us that Krishna is that from which everything comes. And this first verse is teaching. So the first verse is, first of all, it's a statement that Krishna is that absolute truth, and then it's giving different, there are 12 different phrases in this first verse that are aspects of the absolute truth. And then, of course, the Bhagavatam expands on those 12 points, helps us understand from different angles of vision. It's something like a hub and spokes that go into the hub. It doesn't matter you go this spoke, that spoke, the other spoke. It all goes to one point, the hub. And the hub is the absolute truth from which everything comes, and there's aspects of that from which everything comes. So we're going to be discussing that this morning and then again this evening. We'll see how far we get, just going through the first verse. What I plan to do is take the terms, the phrases, Sanskrit phrases, and then drill down a little bit and expand a little bit and then come back up for some air and then go to the next one, down a little bit, and search around and come back up again, next one. Then we'll put it all together. Strands of the cotton and hold up the strand and we'll put them all together and make a nice giwik, the absolute truth giwik. Let me begin this way. Let me ask you a question. If you were taking an exam, say a Bhagavad Gita course or whatever, something, and you were asked the question, first question on the exam, what's the highest truth you know? How would you answer that? You know, you'd ask, what kind of a question is that? Let me tell you a little, it's anecdotal, but it's a nice story, and it conveys the point. My first contact with Hare Krishna devotees was at a university, and my first association with Srila Prabhupada was at that same university. And through the combination of the devotees and association with Prabhupada and the chanting of the holy name, I became a devotee. At least I tried to become a devotee. And in the course of my 40-something years of devotional service, I've felt a calling to give back that which I received. It's called gratitude. I receive, let me just not just receive, let me give back. And similarly, you can think how that might apply to all of you. You've received, how can you repay that which you received by giving back? So I've been very interested, in fact, not more than interested, very involved for 40-something years in college programs. I'm going to describe one of them to you. During a period of time, when the same devotee His name is Rupanuga Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple. I didn't know the history till much later, but some man in New York City had met Prabhupada, was moved by Prabhupada's work, and said, if you can commit somebody to go to the place where I live in Buffalo, I will take care of funding a center for you in Buffalo. This is in the very early stages of the Hare Krishna movement. So Prabhupada requested his disciple, Rupanuga Prabhu, to go to Buffalo and start a program. And I didn't know any of that, and I was attending school at the University of Buffalo, and Rupanuga was in charge of the center. He was the president when Prabhupada came to visit the university. I didn't know him, I didn't know Prabhupada, I knew some devotees. Anyway, I became a devotee. I didn't become a devotee in Buffalo, I became a devotee. I joined a temple in Boston for a number of reasons. Then after some time, I was a trade to New York. Someone went from New York to Boston because they knew how to run a printing press and I didn't know how to do anything. So they sent me to New York. And then later Rupanuga became the president of the Brooklyn Temple. That was an interesting story how that happened too. And he, like myself, he was very committed to college programs. So one of the things that he did that any center can do, you can still do it today here in Seattle or wherever you're from. He made arrangements, he through different methods. He found out who are professors of religion or philosophy or, you know, different professors that would then invite him to conduct a program in their class. Sometimes they would come to our temple. Sometimes he would go to their place. So I was his assistant. So here's how we would conduct the program. It was, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that anybody today do the, you know, try to imitate what he did, but here's what he did. It was just him and me. And he had a very clear idea of what he wanted to do. He wanted to, like, knock people off their seats. That's what he wanted to do. And he did it. He was very tall and had a, you know, like a profile, a personality that was very impressive, like a statesman or a movie actor or something like that. He was naturally bald, had glasses, looked like Bhaktisiddhanta kind of glasses, you know, real. He was intense. Tall, intense, powerful person. So he went into the classroom. There's the students all sitting around. He doesn't say a word. He would go to one place, make it clean. Like, do a little ritual. Make it very clean. Set up a picture of Krishna, Gopal Krishna, Krishna with the cows. And then he would pull out his stick of incense, you know, incense thing, and lit the incense. And while they're watching, he would, you know, say the prayers of Namo Vishnu Padaya and offer the incense to Krishna, place the stick of incense. He's not saying a word to them. He's doing a little ritual, like, what's this guy? What's he doing? And what's he going to say? You know, he had them on the edge of their seat. And then he would sit down on a straw mat, sit very straight, and had little tiny cartels. And the first thing he said is, I'm going to demonstrate to you mantra meditation. And he, you know, chanted a little bit, just a little bit. So that's just the warm-up. And then the first thing he said to them was, what is the highest truth you know? That's how he started the program. And people, you know, like, had whiplash. What does he mean? What's the highest truth you know? Like, kind of challenging, and can the heat be put down? It's a little warm. Someone turn the heat down. It's in too much. So one of the things that it did was, certainly everyone was had their full attention and they were very focused. But then focused on what? Focused on truth. So many people, I mentioned this morning, truth sometimes is thought of as the opposite of lying. To tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That's one kind of truth. Don't lie. But the Vedic conception of truth, and then he would, depending upon, you know, whether they spoke anything or not, or just like looked at him like, what planet are you from, sir? Depending on how they responded, he would start to explain the Vedic conception of truth. The Vedic conception of truth is that which is the basis and support of something else. The existence of something else comes from truth. It's a source of emanation of, or the cause of, something. And the something has its source of emanation. And that source of emanation is a truth, from which relative truths come, based upon a higher truth. Then there's higher truths and higher truths. And the highest truth is that from which everything comes. And then he would explain, after getting the concept down, why it's meaningful. And then he would explain the difference between illusion and reality. Because truth is reality. And not being connected with reality is illusion. So you can live your life in illusion, thinking this truth, that truth. Like, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, they endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You've heard that one before, right? That's an American document that says there are certain truths, that all men are created equal. They're endowed with their Creator with certain inalienable rights. That's a truth. So then what's the highest truth? So to understand the highest truth understands how we can life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness truth, how we can do that one properly. Because otherwise, if we don't understand the highest truth, we're going to do that one improperly. And that's the program of material life. So he would explain like that, that the human form of life is an opportunity to connect with the highest truth. And then he would go on to explain that the Vedas tell us, they disclose, that the highest truth is Krishna. It was pretty cool. And, you know, there was other things that he did. But that was one of the standard approaches that he took. So, why are we interested in the absolute truth? Because it tells us how to, in practical terms, you know, not just philosophical, abstract, it doesn't mean anything because it's just philosophy. In practical terms, it tells us how to lead our lives. It tells us what the goal is of our lives. Many people don't have a goal. People don't even ask the question. At best, if you really look at it carefully, the goal is sense gratification. And how do you get sense gratification? Fruitive activity. So ramp up the economy so you can get economic development, so that you can get the goal, sense gratification. It's not very high thinking. Animals do the same thing, you know, sense gratification. In many ways, they do it better. But it's not the goal. It's not the truth. It's not reality. So the relevance of what we're going to be discussing is it tells us how to align our lives and use the inalienable rights that we've been given by our Creator to reach the goal, to reach the kingdom of God, to restore our eternal relationship, that sambandha, eternal relationship with the Supreme. That's why we're doing this. And at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, it lays the groundwork for the rest of what's going to follow. I was thinking specifically about the building that we're sitting in, because this is really practical. I remember the time when Nandasutta with others was making the plan for the building. And I remember Nandasutta describing all the stuff that had to be done to make the foundation before you could build the building. Like, you know, we're just in the building up here on the second floor, but besides the ground floor, there's a whole bunch of stuff beneath the ground floor. Like, a ton of stuff. And it cost a lot of money. It may have cost, I don't know what the percentage is, but something close to what the rest of the building costs, just to put stuff make the foundation. But then when you have a good foundation, should be, at least, the building will last a long time. And you don't have a good foundation, and it's real easy for things to get disrupted. We would like to have, similarly, a good foundation in our Krishna consciousness. As a sannyasi, I travel sometimes. And that gives me the opportunity to meet many people. And my experience is, there's a phrase that I use, that is that people commonly, my experience is, many people accept Krishna consciousness from the platform of the mind. But they don't accept Krishna consciousness, they're not equipped yet to accept Krishna consciousness in a deeper level than the mind. And what happens about the mind? The mind is chanchala. So something disturbs the mind and the mind goes over there. Something disturbs the mind goes over there. And one's Krishna consciousness is unsteady, unstable. But there is a stage called steady, nishtha. And to get to the nishtha stage, there we need purification, anartha nivritti. And part of the success of anartha nivritti, like Haridas Thakur said, is there must be proper sambandha again. We have to have a proper foundation of what's what. We can just follow, and then when the wind blows strongly that way, we go that way. And the wind blows strongly another way, we go another way. And I'm not comfortable when I see that happening. Therefore, I wished to take this time with all of you and whoever else is hearing and so forth to help establish a proper foundation. So the basis of our Krishna consciousness is very stable. Not just, you know, we can address a question if people have a question or deal with a doubt if someone has a doubt, but factually set the foundation for reaching the goal. That's the purpose. And it's very neatly, nicely, beautifully packaged in this first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the invocation verse. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to take one strand at a time and hold up that strand and take a look at it and see how it all fits in with this nice package of the invocation verse to help us get a clear understanding of what is this wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva so kindly provides, Sukadeva Goswami spoke, and our acharyas commented on, and Prabhupada made so easily accessible to us. So we're going to chant the first verse together. And you can see it on the screen here. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Janmad yasya yaton vayad itaratash charteshu abhigya swarat tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muyanti yatsorayaha tejo varivridam yatha vinimayo yatra trisargo mrisha dhamna svena sadana rastakuhakam satyam param dhimahi. There's the word for word. I'm just going to read slowly the translation. O my Lord Shri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Shri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is Krishna, is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. I, therefore, meditate upon him, Lord Shri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. So, the procedure I'm going to follow is taking each of the terms, Sanskrit terms, there's 12 of them, and, as I said, give the meanings, not just exactly the translation, but the import of what the phrase is communicating. Explore it a bit, and then we'll come back up and go to the next one. So, it begins, the Srimad Bhagavatam begins with this Vedic mantra. It's actually a formal Vedic mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O my Lord Shri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So in his several, the purport for this verse is quite long, but I've taken a little extract from it. Obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudev, directly indicates Lord Shri Krishna, who is the son of Vasudev and Devaki. So, when the term Vasudevaya is used, it means explicitly Krishna. The son, then it's Krishna. Which Krishna? The son of Vasudev and Devaki, that one. Like Prabhupada explained that in Bhagavad Gita, the phrase that's used when Krishna speaks is Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, because there may be many Krishnas. It doesn't say Sri Krishna Uvacha, it's Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Of course, there may be somebody with the name Bhagavan also, but Krishna, who? Which Krishna? Krishna who is the possessor of all opulences in full, that one. Someone may have the name Bhagavan, but they may not have all opulences in full. Someone may have the name Krishna, but they may not be all attractive. Because one who possesses all attractive opulences is all attractive. The term Vasudeva is a term that impersonalists also like, and they don't think of Krishna. Just like the verse, Bahunam Janmanam Mante Gyanavan Mam Prapajate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sadurlapa. Well, when they write their commentary, they don't say, the son of Vasudeva and Devaki is everything. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. They say, the impersonal Brahman, which is all-pervasive, is the source of everything. So, of course, there, since the beginning of time, there are these two groups of transcendentalists, the personalists and the impersonalists. And they don't agree. The impersonalists have their rendering, and the personalists have their rendering. The devotees of the Lord have their scriptural authority for accepting the way that they accept, and the impersonalists have their scriptural authority for accepting the way that they accept, and they disagree. So, as devotees, or as considering ourselves to trying to become devotee, or even go lighter and say someone who's considering whether or not my real heart is that I'm a devotee. How do we, besides, you know, who we are, who, like, you know, is it something that's the mind, or is it something that's reality? And how do we know reality? We know reality through scripture. And otherwise you don't know. Like the discussion this morning of Shabda Praman is the best evidence. You can't know through your mind or through your senses. You can know through Shabda. And how do you receive properly? How do you receive Shabda? Well, Shabda says you receive through disciplic succession. You receive in descending manner through disciplic succession. That's how you receive. And otherwise you won't know. So, the authority, just like Arjuna accepts Krishna as in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram. You are the supreme personality of God, the supreme abode, the supreme purifier. And it's not just my opinion, but other great authorities, they've concluded the same. So these are important considerations when contemplating. But so the Srimad Bhagavatam wants us, Srila Vyasadeva, its author, wants us to bring our namaha, our obeisances, unto the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. And therefore, Bhagavate, not just the impersonal, all-pervasive Brahman, but Bhagavate means it's calling, just like Radhe, her name is Radha, and she's addressed Radhe. So there's Bhagavan and there's Bhagavate. It's calling the person. It's personal. And he has a name, Vasudeva. So this name, Vasudeva, it indicates the son of Vasudeva, the person. And Namaha, similarly, it indicates there's the obeisances unto whom. Now here's what the impersonalists say, not unto whom. Just obeisances. Like they say, not yajna or sacrifice unto whom, just sacrifice. If you're an impersonalist, that's your point of view. It says, you know, have you ever heard of sacrifice that's not unto someone? We make sacrifices for someone. And that's nice. But just sacrifice. Like, just existing. What do you do when you're Brahman realized? You perform sacrifice. Sacrifice unto whom? No sacrifice unto whom, just sacrifice. Homogenized boredom. No variety, no personality, no exchange, no love, no relationship. So, the first verse is establishing relationship. There's the worshiper, there's the worshipful, and the process of worship. Namaha. There's another verse in the 11th canto Bhagavatam. This is part of the Uddhava Gita portion, where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, and this is a verse that he speaks of the powerful. I am bodily and mental strength, and I am the devotional activities of my devotees. My devotees worship me in 9 different forms, among which I am the original and primary Vasudev. Krishna is here declaring, I am also known as, one of my names is Vasudev. But then within the verse itself, this Adi Murtir is qualifying that Vasudev feature. That's his original form. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. This is disclosing the nature of the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is the source of everything, the cause of all causes, and he has his original form. And his original form is Vasudev, Krishna. Adi Murtir Aham Para. So at the very first line of the Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva is disclosing the Absolute Truth is a person, and his name is Krishna. And then the rest of the verse, 111, is going to give more details about this original person, this Adi Murti Vasudev. Here's something that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke. 3 verses found in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila. Svarup Lakshana, Ara Tatasta Lakshana, Edvi Lakshane Vastu, Jane Muni Gana. By 2 symptoms, Svarup Lakshana, prime personal or principal characteristics, and Tatasta Lakshana, marginal characteristics. The great sages can understand an object. So what is it? We would like to understand the Absolute Truth, that from which everything comes. How are we to understand that object? We're the subject, he's the object, or it is the object. There's 2 principal characteristics by which an object can be understood. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, there are 3 parts of his personal characteristics, or an object's personal characteristics, Svarup Lakshana, bodily features, nature, and form. And then marginal are his activities. It's not to say marginal, like the activities of Krishna are different than Krishna. The activities of Krishna are Krishna, as much as his form, qualities, and names are his characteristics. But they're principal ones. So we want to know about Krishna. We want to know about the Absolute Truth. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, in the auspicious invocation, at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva has described the Supreme Personality of Godhead by these symptoms. So there's 2 things. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is confirming that it's Vyasadeva who's the speaker. Shukadeva Goswami spoke Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva wrote it. But Vyasadeva spoke this one and the other 2 invocation verses. Lord Chaitanya is confirming that. And another second point is that these invocation verses, especially the first verse, the very beginning, these primary and marginal characteristics are being indicated by Vyasadeva. So there's a form, there's a name. Where are we? Bodily features, nature, and form are the personal characteristics. The statement is, Vasudev, the son of Vasudev and Devaki, is the absolute truth. And he has his form, he has his personality, he has his qualities, he has his nature. And because of all these things, we'll be able to fix our mind, dhimahi, in meditation upon Krishna. So that's the Gayatri Mantra inference. It's the Vedanta inference. It's the absolute truth. So that first line, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Then comes the first line of these four verses. Janmadi Asya Yato, or Janmad Yasya Yato. And not the literal translation, but how we can understand what's being communicated. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because, so that what's in the brackets here, that's the last line. We spoke about the last line. Satyam Param Dhimahi. So now that's being put. I meditate upon Lord Krishna because, why? Janmad Yasya Yataha. He is the absolute truth. And the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifest universes. In this really thick part of just three anuchedas of Paramatma Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami uses this technical term where in Sanskrit, rather than saying a whole long list of things, you say the first thing and then put adi. Like sometimes it's used the verse something something adi. Now beginning with Sarvadharmam adi. You know, 1866 Bhagavad Gita. So it's a practical way where technically the whole of something is expressed just by saying the beginning part and then adi. So janma, adi. So beginning with creation, and then you could say adi means etc. Creation, maintenance, and destruction. So right at the beginning, the Bhagavatam is speaking, this first verse is speaking about material creation, because the spiritual world isn't created, it's eternal. The material world is created at some point in time, it's manifest. So beginning with janma, etc., creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifest universe, this word yataha means whose. It's a personal pronoun. Again, Jiva Goswami goes to town with this one. It's not impersonal. It's a personal pronoun. Like you could say, you know, whose cartels are these? We're not speaking about something impersonal. It's a person. Who do they belong to? Does anybody? We had this during our yatra. Somebody lost their sunglasses and somebody lost their bead bag. Whose bead bag? It's not impersonal, it's personal. Yataha is personal. It's a personal pronoun. You know, it's a small point maybe, especially if you're not so careful, but Sanskrit is very carefully composed by Vyasadeva. It's indicating the person from whom asya, the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the universe is coming. Remember, this first verse is describing the absolute truth. So this is an aspect, one of the spokes on the wheel. One of the spokes that goes to the hub is the absolute truth is the source of creation. The absolute truth is the source of maintenance. The absolute truth is the source of destruction. There may be agents that create, maintain, and destroy. But there's a source of their ability to create, maintain, and destroy. Therefore, ultimately, the absolute truth is creator, maintainer, and destroyer. And others are nimitta, they're instruments of that source. So our meditation in Srimad Bhagavatam, the exposition of Bhagavatam, is upon that yataha, that absolute truth from whom creation, etc., are coming. Therefore we meditate upon him. In his purport, Prabhupada, to this verse, Prabhupada writes, Vasudeva, Lord Sri Krishna, is the prime cause of all causes. Everything that exists emanates from him. Going back to the previous verse, because it's connected, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. What is it about Vasudev? It is from him that everything is coming. So what is there special of amongst the possible names of the personality of Godhead? Why this one, Vasudev? In the translation, as you recall, he's all pervading. Question. How can a person be all-pervading? Impersonalists have one idea. We have another idea. Our idea is he's all-pervading through the agency of his energies. Like, you recall that Vishnu Purana verse mentioned in the morning. Vishnu Purana verse that says, as from a fire, light and heat spread in all directions. Similarly, from the sun, throughout the universe, light and heat spread through the sun. Similarly, the Supreme Soul who's situated within the universe is Garbhadakshay Vishnu. He is present everywhere because it is but an expansion of his energies. In that sense, all-pervasive. That's Vasudev. So Krishna, the person, is all-pervasive through the expanse of his energies. That's how we understand the all-pervasive feature of Krishna. He's also all-pervasive by his manifestation as Paramatma within every atom of that energy. That's his energy he manifests. And he's all-pervasive in his supersoul aspect. And therefore he's fully conscious everywhere. That's coming up. Itaratash charteshu abhigya swarat. He's fully conscious of everything everywhere. But we'll get there. Now it's just janmad yasya yataha, just taking that strand and unpacking other little fibers that make up that strand. And we'll put it back together again, make a giwik. Krishna is all attractive. That's significant. If the name, Prabhupada writes in his purport to this verse, the name Krishna is important because of all the names of God, we've heard this before, of all the names of God, Krishna is the best name to address the absolute truth. Why? The answer, because Krishna means all attractive. So the all attractive aspect of the absolute truth attracts us. It's being presented, the name is being presented in the Bhagavatam because the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to take us, to extract us from the clutches of material existence and bring us again to the position of spiritual reality. The agent or the cause of all causes is Krishna, the all-attractive. So therefore his name is presented. And there may be someone else who's attractive. Or their teachings are something. Or their activities are something, or their qualities are something. All of those attractivenesses come from the all-attractive, because he's the absolute truth. I was having this discussion recently. Someone who's newly taking up Krishna consciousness. Some of you may be in that category. Some of you may be helping those in that category. So it was a nice discussion. therefore I'm sharing it with you. It's relevant discussion. I like Krishna. Since childhood, I've been worshiping Krishna. But since childhood, I'm also praying to and calling the names of this one, that one, the other one. So, why just Krishna? When we have our altar, if there's Krishna, and there's the spiritual master, we're taught, as a new devotee, put the picture of Prabhupada, put the picture of Krishna. And we don't need other pictures. So, does that, I mean, several things. Does that mean that Prabhupada gets a higher rating than this one, that one? Some demigod or, you know, something? And the answer is no, not a higher rating. It's not, you know, he's better than that one. That's not like that. It's a direct representative of, in the line of disciplic succession from Krishna. Because the representative of Krishna just gives Krishna. His position, in fact, described by Prabhupada himself as, he's the postal peon. And if you don't know what that means, it's not very complimentary. You know, somebody writes a letter, and they put a stamp on it, and they take it, they seal the envelope, and take it to the post office. And the postal peon is one who's on the other side, let's say Timbuktu, and he's the postal peon in Timbuktu. He gets a bag full of Timbuktu mail, and he goes to, you know, door to door, and here's your mail. This one's from Krishna. This is for you. This one's from Krishna. This is for you. And that person is a postal peon. All he has to do is take the letter from Krishna and give it to you, and, oh, here's one for you too. It's not a, you know, what's the qualification? Well, you know, you don't let rain or snow or sleet or hail or dark of night stop you. You go and deliver the mail because you're a postal peon. You're a government agent. So you brave the elements of opposition to deliver the message because it's got your name on it, someone's name on it. This is for you. That's the special position of the member of the disciplic succession. And then the message is from Krishna. And the worship goes to Krishna through that person. And others, commonly, if we have others, then commonly those others are, I worship them separately, worship them separately, worship them separately. But that's not what Krishna says. And that's not what the nature of the absolute truth is. Yanti devi vrita devan pitrin yanti pitrin vritaha. You have a different destination if you worship differently. Not that all worship goes to the same place. Different worship takes you to different destinations. And kamaistaista ritigena prapadyante anya devata. By the worship of anya devatas, various devatas, commonly that's done because there's strong material desire and they fulfill my material desire, so they're important to me. It works. I worship, I get the things I want. But where does those who give the things that you want get the capacity to give the things that you want? They get from the absolute truth. So the indication from Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, is those who worship the devatas, they're avidipurvakam. They're actually worshiping me, but not with proper understanding. Worshiping me wrongly, or with a misunderstanding, and therefore they should just worship me. Not like Krishna's greedy and selfish or something. It's just Siddhanta, it's just reality. He's the source of everything. So the Bhagavatam is establishing that in a nutshell. Janmad yasya yataha. And we worship Krishna, the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present everywhere by his energies, and we recognize his energies and accept his energies as his energies and then act accordingly. Referring here to what Prabhupada writes in his purport, the cause of all causes. I've spoken several times now about the source of emanation of things, the absolute truth being the source of emanation. Having a similar connotation, but just saying it in different language, is the cause of all causes. So, probably some of you are engineers. Or either that, or, you know, you write computer programs, software and IT stuff. So, with engineering, with physics and science and so forth, there's cause and effect. Simple principle, cause and effect. And a lot of engineering is, you know, take a research project and you're studying cause and effect. And once you know the cause of some effect, you can replicate the effect by manipulating causes and making a product. That's all it is. And so as science or technology, cause and effect, is going on, what's the original cause? Prabhupada writes, boys, slow down. Prabhupada writes in his purport, it's common for a thoughtful person to look up and see the stars in the sky and with awe question, where has all of this come from? How has this all come into being? Since time immemorial, thoughtful persons will ask such a question. The Bhagavatam is supplying the answer to thoughtful persons. One cannot know by speculation. One can know by revelation, by having it disclosed. And Krishna very kindly is disclosing, or Vyasadeva is very kindly disclosing. Krishna, Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva, he's the cause. He's the cause of everything else that's a cause. You find some cause, Krishna is the cause of that. Or Krishna is the cause of that which is the cause of that. Or Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam. It's another inference or aspect of the absolute truth. And one other point is janma adi. Without explicitly stating it, it's indicating time. Because time is needed for bringing things into janma. You don't have janma without time. Kala. And then there are phases of time. Creation, maintenance, and destruction. So the source of all of them is beyond the influence of time. That's the inference. Krishna, because it is stated explicitly further down in the first verse, Dhamnasvena Sada. The abode of the Lord is Sada. It's not created. It's Sada. It's eternal. Always. He who is the source of time and the influence of time, of creation, maintenance, and destruction, is not influenced by time. That's unpacking Janma Adi. He's beyond time. He's the source of time. Time is him. It's under his control. It's his energy, Kala Shakti. Or more explicitly, it's him. It's non-different than him. So he's not influenced by it. And the implication of that, that's the Swarup Lakshana. The marginal characteristic is when he has pastimes, don't think of it as pastimes influenced by time. How else are we supposed to think of it? Well, we just hear it. It's activity that's timeless. It's mind-blowing, isn't it? Activity that's timeless. You know what infinity sign looks like? Yes, you do. It goes like this. Right? You've seen? You know, you follow what I'm doing with my finger? This keeps going. Where does it begin and end? It doesn't have a beginning. It doesn't have an end. It's infinity. You've heard of infinity, right? So, what is eternal time look like? Well, whatever it is, that's what Krishna's pastimes are. They're eternal. Sada. And his abode is eternal. His form is eternal. And he's eternal. And from He who is eternal, that which is temporary comes into being. And that which is temporary is maintained, and that which is temporary is withdrawn. And again, becomes part of His energies. This is, according to what our acharyas say, this is a principal teaching of the Bhagavatam, or Vyasadeva. Here's the technical term. Shakti, Parinama, Vada. Vada means doctrine. Parinama means transformation. And Shakti means potency. Vyasadeva's teaching is the Absolute Truth has unlimited potencies which He can transform as He likes. And He does. And those energies, he mixes them however He likes and gets so many things. And then they maintain for some time, then He withdraws those things. And what are those things? They're parinama. They're transformations of His energy. And His energy has an aspect of oneness with Him and has an aspect of difference, as much as energy and energetic are not identical. But they're inseparable. There's a oneness and difference aspect of energy and energetic. And that's how the Bhagavatam explains creation, both the spiritual and the material realm. They're energies of the Supreme Lord that according to His will, parinama, He transforms them. So that's in this little phrase, janma dyasya yataha. Pretty cool, huh? From our acharyas, these things can be clearly understood. And very important, the oneness and difference aspect of God's energies with Himself is the justification for devotional service. Let me explain. How can we justify using a microphone? Or using this TV camera? Or, you know, all this computer stuff? That's material. We got our car, and, you know, we go zoom, zoom, zooming around in our car. We got our cell phone and yada, yada, yada. We're using all these material things. What's the justification for that? What's the basis for devotional service? That's coming up in the next verse, by the way, 112. But devotional service has as its basis the scriptural justification for it is everything comes from the Absolute Truth. We'll say it the other way around. There isn't something that doesn't exist without a relationship with the Absolute Truth. In fact, that's one of the Chaturasloki verses of the Bhagavatam, where the Personality of Godhead says to Brahma, Maya means to think or see something as having artha or value separate from the Supreme Lord. Know that to be my illusory potency. So in this first verse, we're going to hear about the illusory potency of the Lord. Along with creation comes the illusory potency. Like, you know, here's this little table. It's nice. It's just sitting there. It's white. It's sturdy. It doesn't look like it's, you know, giving some vibes of Maya or something like that. It's just sitting there. But if one sees this table or any aspect of material creation as existing separate from the Supreme Lord, there's a whammy feature built in. The whammy, the bewilderment feature. One becomes covered so that one doesn't understand the reality of this thing has its relationship with the Personality of Godhead. And if it doesn't have a relationship with the Personality of Godhead, I can enjoy it. It's up for grabs. I can make it mine. I can own it, enjoy it, exploit it, do anything I want with it. You know, within my own little value system, whatever I've got, and someone's got theirs, and someone else has got theirs, and it's called chaos. Everyone's got theirs. Everything's up for grabs because there isn't ever a relationship with God. The deluding potency is there that does not act upon one who has a sense of the Absolute Truth. Everything has its relationship with the source of emanation. The whammy is gone. Maya is withdrawn. One sees things as Krishna sees things. They're his energies, meant for his service. Nice. Janma dyasya yata. And one last point here mentioned, the last line, is this very same phrase is one of the sutras in Vedanta Sutra. So the Bhagavatam begins, Janma dyasya yataha. So it's like, hello, we're going to be explaining this in what follows. Janma dyasya yataha. We're going to be explaining that aphorism of Vedanta Sutra. Yataha, the personal pronoun, he from whom creation, etc. comes, is worshipped by me. And I'll just cover one more of these 12 phrases. Anvayad itaratash charteshu abhigya. Again, it's the personal pronoun. It's referring to Krishna, Vasudeva. Vasudeva, he is anvayad, means directly. Itaratas means indirectly. Abhigya means conscious. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is directly and indirectly conscious. Arteshu, Prabhupada has translated it as purposes. A very straightforward meaning of artha is value. Commonly, people use artha as economic development. Dharma artha, kama, moksha, dharma artha. Purpose of dharma is prosperity. Get money, get wealth, artha, economic development. That's just how people use it today. The real meaning is the value, intrinsic value. Here Prabhupada is saying it's the purpose. There's a purpose to the cosmic manifestation. And the personality of Godhead is fully conscious. Abhigya means fully conscious of the purpose, of the artha, both directly and indirectly. So, you see the notes below. Krishna is, because he's the Absolute Truth, everything that emanates, everything that exists is his emanation. So he's the substance. He's the observer of the substance, and he's consciously aware and experiencing everything that's going on in creation. He's not different than everything. There's a different aspect, and there's a non-different aspect. So here the emphasis is on the non-different aspect. He's everything. Krishna is everything. It doesn't mean that I worship my shoes, or I worship my computer, or I worship the rug. We don't worship some inanimate object. But we should understand that even inanimate objects have no existence apart from the source of emanation. So, as there's three parts to this. All energy is Krishna's. As, remember, Krishna and Krishna's. So all energy is Krishna's. Then he's aware of his energy. He's antaryami, within the energy, material, including material energy. He's the super soul, and he's directly conscious of everything on an atomic level and the macro level. He's directly conscious. And he's also the observer. He's the witness. Upadrashta in the language of Bhagavad Gita. So all three phases, the substance, the observer, and the experiencer. It's all Krishna, directly and indirectly. Here's Prabhupada's explanation of what this means, how to think of this. Whatever happens to the body quickly becomes known to the embodied. Supposing there is an insect crawling on your arm. It's too cold for that, but supposing there was an insect crawling on your arm. You could see the insect crawling on your arm. Maybe before you see the insect, you feel the insect crawling on your arm. So you can experience it, and you can see it. In two different ways, you know the insect is crawling on your arm. In Krishna's case, he's also seeing and experiencing, but he's also the arm. He's also the insect. So that's, how do we put that one inside our little mind and, you know, again, it's whiplash. How do we think that thought? But that's what the verse is saying. The absolute truth is, he is, Krishna is, directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. And then we'll go, you know, through all phases of time. Try to make a computer that can do that one. Try to make a computer that can be conscious, leave time out, conscious of all things, in all places, right now. It's information overload. Your fuses will blow. But Krishna doesn't have that problem. And then all phases of time, past, present, and future. That's what the verse is saying. The absolute truth is cognizant. The absolute truth is a person, and the absolute truth is cognizant. Chit. Sat. Chit. Ananda. Fully conscious. Of that which he creates, and we're going to hear coming up the spiritual world also, that which is eternally manifest. Okay. I'm going to end there and see if there's some discussion. One thought here is, in preparing for this, I was contemplating, my goodness, so much philosophy. By the end, we're, you know, people are going to have their sleeping bags stretched out on the floor here. When's he going to finish the class? So, how to make it lively so that it doesn't make you sleepy is in part to remind you of what it is that we're trying to do. Just like, you know, building, designing what's going to go under the ground floor of this building. How many of you know what's underneath the ground floor of this building? Maybe one, Nandasutta. Maybe another somebody. But we wouldn't have this building. We didn't have that stuff underneath the ground floor of this building. And similarly, for the purpose of our spiritual maturing, rather than, you know, somebody that knows is holding our hand and they just tell us, you know, this is this and that's that. We don't understand this is that. And then we just say, yeah. Like Prabhupada gives the example. A child. If the child may hold the microphone before his mother and father and say, what's this, daddy, mommy? They say, it's a microphone. Okay, it's a microphone. What do they understand what a microphone is? But it's knowledge, because they receive from the authority, it's knowledge. But some point in time, somebody's got to know what a microphone is to make the thing work, you know, and if it goes wrong, to make it go right. Like that, with our spiritual life, we need a proper foundation. Because somebody may not be around to hold your hand and say, this is this and that's that, and you need to be able to conduct your life in spiritual activity where there's steadiness. It's not interrupted by or generated by circumstance. That's the intent, to prepare that foundation. Instead, because the Bhagavatam invocation is providing that. I'm trying to share that with you. Now, it's more fun, in one sense, to go to the stories, because the stories tell the same thing. The stories are just embellishing the principles. You know, it's fun to have kirtan and everything that we do here in the temple room. But without the foundation, we're not going to have a temple room. And you know, the next temple you're going to build, you're going to have to, whatever the issues are in that place, you're going to have to build, plan and construct the foundation. So similarly, our spiritual life is to make sure there's a clear foundation for who is Krishna, what is the absolute truth, and what are the features of the absolute truth, and how are we to move forward with uninterrupted devotion, not circumstantially generated or circumstantially interrupted, but uninterrupted devotional service. With the proper foundation, clear faith and understanding of Krishna, we can do that. Okay, so any discussion? Yes. Up here in the front. Thank you.
Maharaj, you said that the Lord's pastimes are not influenced by time. They are eternal. But if you take a pastime of the Lord, like killing of Agasara, so it took at a certain point of time.
It looks like.
Yes. So.
But it's not.
How do we understand?
It's inconceivable, but I'll explain it. But don't think because I explain it, it's going to be conceivable. Here's how Prabhupada explains. The sun rises on the eastern horizon, generally. And after it rises in one place, then another place the sun is rising, and then another place it's rising, and the sun is rising, and the sun is rising, and the sun is rising. The sun is always rising somewhere. Similarly, Krishna's pastimes are eternally being performed somewhere. It's an eternal pastime. Krishna's appearing in the prison house of Kamsa. Or Krishna's killing of Agasura. It's an eternal pastime. We only have experience of events that are within the frame of time. So naturally we try to impose that which is our experience on that which isn't within the realm of time. And so we get whiplash. It doesn't fit. An event that's without past, present, and future. I'll give you another one to help, you know, understand the inconceivable nature. Directly in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, that place, my eternal abode, there's no need of sunlight, moonlight, or electricity. Correct? Because everything is self-luminous. But, in Krishna's pastimes, we hear about phases of the moon. On the full moon night of the Sharad season, Krishna engages in rasa dance. Well, what's going on? Krishna says there's no moon, and here there's moon. It's a contradiction. Apparently, it's a contradiction. But it's not a moon like we know moons, with phases of the moon. It's the real thing, of which this is a reflection, and its effect is different. It's different. It's a different set of rules. It's his internal potency manifesting in such a way that his pastimes are being enacted eternally. And then another one, you know, Krishna, his form is eternal. There's what's the technical term? Vikara. There's no change in his form, but he appears as, wait a minute, he appears as the prison house of Kamsa as Vishnu, then he appears in a little childlike form, and then he goes through different ages or stages, looks like time and transformation, vikaram. But it's not. It's something else. It's another set of rules. This looks like that, not the other way around. That looks like this. Because there's something in the spiritual world therefore we have its counterpart, its reflection in the material world, only because it's in the spiritual world. Now, for a non-devotee, that's impossible to understand. For a devotee, it's difficult to understand. We can't understand with our, you know, little intellect. We won't be able to. But by hearing, we can understand. Because Krishna will disclose by hearing what is eternal, just like with the children here, this infinity. What is that? Doesn't have a beginning, doesn't have an end. What's past time that are outside of time? Because we only know events within time. What's an event that's on the other side of time? Time is conspicuous by its absence, but there's still events. It's Leela, the agency of his internal potency. That's the nature of the spiritual world and the nature of Krishna. Yes?
Another question.
Okay.
So you said Lord is fully cognizant directly and indirectly.
That's what the verse says right here.
Yeah. Why is it indirect? It should be, when it is fully cognizant, it should be directly. Why is that word indirectly?
Why is it indirectly also there? Just by seeing. I gave the example because it's given in scripture. There's an insect crawling on your arm. You can see it. Or there's an insect crawling on your arm. I can see it. In Krishna's case, he's super soul, so he's both indirectly and directly.
I really appreciate your stress on our foundation of Krishna consciousness, understanding and deepening our philosophy. My question here is, it appears to me, and you rightly said many times, that more people are interested in our ritualistic thing, and
sure,
superficial and all that. How do we increase our aptitude, or how do we make surrounding that invites people to learn more philosophy, which is really difficult at times for most people.
Make nice prasadam.
we try to make very simple prasadam to them purposely, because otherwise people are falling asleep in a second session.
Yeah. But this kind of class is not for the Sunday program. I'll say it the other way around. I would not give this kind of... on Sunday evening, I'm not going to give this kind of class. People will just, like, you know, they're out of here. This is for another group of people. Persons that have, you know, like wet wood become dry wood. They're ready to ignite. But you bring the wet wood. You can't put the wet wood, you know, into something like this. So, nice prasadam. Nice kirtan. You know, it's simple. Something that's stimulating, but simple. To help, you know, make a little step. And, you know, cordial dealings. Nice qualities. Devotees being happy in their exchanges with one another. And people see that and they go, wow, that's nice. They don't know what it is that's, you know, inside our hearts and, you know, though the deeper consciousness that we're carrying. Maybe to some degree, you know, they ask a question or two and they're surprised by the answer. But that's not, you know, the initial is help people have a good experience so they keep coming back again. And gradually, according to, you know, each person's trajectory of their, you know, where they're headed, where they're coming from. They can take something. Harivilas is expert. He's, you know, some are inclined to service. He's not here. I'm just commenting. You know, he's got a nice program. You know, the big net that goes outside and brings lots of people to the temple. And then when they're in the temple, it's nice. It's fun, nice kirtan. You know, then there's some service and they can learn something simple. Yeah, if you have introductory courses and, you know, depending upon their inclination.
Thank you.
No, some people just, they like to see what they see, so they give some money. It's the same thing that Krishna says to Balaram in the Bhagavatam. They can give their life, they can give their words, they can give their intelligence, they can give their wealth. Give them some service in one of those ways. We want to come to this stage, but not everybody is ready to come to this stage. So we have this, and other times we don't have this. We have the other. Recognize, tune into, and offer what will help people take a step toward Krishna. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So is there any reasoning given in the scriptures for why Krishna introduced the concept of time? Because in a natural state,
it's not a concept, first of all. It's one of his energies. And the answer is, you don't have material existence without time. So the prior question is, why material existence? Because without time, you don't have material existence. So why did God create? And one of the essential agencies of creation is time. Time is really... I have a fascination for... because of reading in the Bhagavatam, it's... I wanted to go more deeply into the topic of time. It's fascinating. But why creation? Because some living entities want it. They want enjoy without God. It's not possible to enjoy without God, but they want. So time is needed to create that situation, illusory situation, that looks like the real situation, but it's not. Time is essential. And there's measures of time. The Bhagavatam starts from the smallest unit of time to the true Pararthas. The lifetime of Brahma divided by two. And all of it is illusory, because real time is eternal. It's a deep topic. But why is to provide creation? Why creation? People want it. Yes?
Hi, Krishna. I'm trying to rephrase my question last time.
You wrote it down, right?
No, but yeah.
No, but yeah. That's a good start.
Same as Krishna, I have a four quality that I present our quality and character, personality,
okay.
And quality.
Okay.
Through quality, which is such a phenomenal personality, is like the soul of the
body. Say it slow. Say it slow. Say it again.
The quality is such a phenomenal, which is covered now. The personality.
His quality.
Our quality.
Okay. I'm just going to get you clear here.
And our personality is the soul of the body. And the form is the spiritual form.
Yeah.
That's not here for some reason. Well, my question was, why the form is separate now?
Why?
Why our form is not together with our personality? And
oh, it is. Body. It's just dormant.
So, now in this body, where is my form?
The spiritual form is dormant. It's there. You know, like dormant, like a seed. You know what a seed is. Within a seed, there's a tree, or plant or whatever, but it's dormant. It's there. Life is there. How long can a seed sit, or be in a dormant state? Long time. And then, with the right circumstances, it germinates. Because life is there. And then it comes out. Though that's just a metaphor, because there are some differences between our spiritual identity and, you know, the covering of the spiritual identity. But the spiritual identity, though it's similar, is the spiritual identity is there. And under right circumstances, it comes out. A very nice example, if you want to understand it more clearly, is found in Canto 1, Chapter 6, where Narada is describing his previous life. And he perfected his life under the guidance of those Bhaktivedantas. And at the time of death, simultaneous with his leaving his body, his spiritual form manifest. It was there, as ours is here. It just matured through the practices of devotional service. So when we're engaging our, you know, these senses in devotional service, we're engaging our subtle senses and we're developing our spiritual senses. And those are three different things, by the way. The hand, the sense of touch, which is subtle sense, even without the hand, there could be a sense of touch. Without the machine part, it's the faculty, subtle. And then there's the spiritual sense, the spiritual form. By the process of the devotional service, we're purifying this one, making the object of our subtle sense the spiritual senses of Krishna, and by that developing our spiritual form. Keep your seatbelt fastened and stay on for the ride. It's a nice journey. Okay. Okay, fine.
Question online. It's from Anand Bhavani Prabhu. He says, Maharaj, please accept my most humble obeisances. Thank you for a wonderful presentation of these foundational principles. His question is, do the impersonalists also follow Srimad Bhagavatam?
No. What Prabhupada said is, Shankaracharya deliberately avoided making commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. The way that Prabhupada explains it is, because he understood it was Krishna and he didn't want to offend Krishna, so he didn't make commentary on the Bhagavatam. However, subsequently, some in his line have made commentary on some of the verses of the Bhagavatam. They've ventured into but they don't follow the Bhagavatam. They just want to, you know, go to the passages within the Bhagavatam that seem to lend themselves to an impersonal presentation. And they screw that meaning out of the Bhagavatam and say, see, even the Bhagavatam is teaching voidism or impersonalism. But they don't follow it. Okay. Yes.
You said Shakti Parinama Vada.
Shakti Parinama Vada. Yeah.
So, the Vada.
V-A-D-A. V-A-D-A means doctrine. The doctrine of. Then the thing that goes in the front.
I see. So, that is a descriptive phrase for the Bhagavatam?
It's a descriptive phrase for Vyasadeva's teaching. His teaching, which of course is the essence of which is the Bhagavatam, but in general his teaching is that all things are but transformations of the energy of Shaktiman. They're the Shaktis, and he, the Shaktiman, transforms them in various ways to create whatever he wants to create. Spiritual world, material world, pastimes, headaches, you know, whatever he wants to create.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else? We're done? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki.